Atlas Labor. Again, welcome to the second part of the transatlantic slave trade. Is one of the most shameful chapter in human history between 1500 and 1900. It's estimated that around 12 million of African men, women, and children were stole from their home by Europeans before being forcefully transported and thousands of miles across the Atlantic. Those who survived the horrific middle passage would then be sold often often separated from their family and put to work as enslaved labor on plantations throughout the New World. While this inhuman trade was eventually abolished in 19th century, the scars still remain, and lasting impact is still being felt by community around the world. On this podcast, I'm going to tell the story of the transatlantic slave trade from its origin to its evolution. We're going to discover the impacts on Africa, the Caribbean, the hours of the Middle Passage, and what life was like for millions of enslaved people. We also look to explore the legacy of slavery and how the effects are still being felt in a modern world. And also review the first chapter podcast I did last week. The transatlantic slave trade timeline. Also, in the first chapter podcast I did last week, you can re-listen it again. Of human bondage and slavery or involuntary servitude has been an element of civilization for thousands of years. From the earliest recorded history, the concepts of slavery or involuntary servitude has existed, transcending cultural or ethical condition and enabling those who have exploited human suffering to build immense wealth and exert control over subservient people. While the emergence of social classes, slavery developed in Sumeria and Mesopotamia, even being referenced in the Code of Hammurabi as an institution with its purpose and place in society. The development of slavery in civilization stemmed from the need for labor, simply the performance of the function that contributed to the augmentation of wealth, of the increase of status. Slaves were either captured during the raids, transported to markets to be sold as commodity, taken prisoner during the battle among rival kingdoms or empires, and cast into bondage as the spoil of the war. Sold or surrendered by the next of a king to serve as a monarch, a person of high social status, or punished for some egregious crime. From 3500 BC forward, recorded slave enterprise in Sumeria have survived. Biblical references to slavery abound, particularly that of the Hebrew people delivered by God from bondage in Egypt. Slavery cast its shadow across the glory of the Roman Empire and the magnificence of classical Greece. Examples of slavery and involuntary servitude in ancient China and other Asian culture attest that the institution has not been confined only to Western civilization, and that's the transatlantic slave trade was an extension of a practice that predated its hour for over to for centuries. Numerous African kingdoms in fact held slavery in high regard, even revered the concept of enslaving. In vanquish of the neighboring empire, foreign military of victory, slavery therefore is as old as civilization itself, a symptom of the human condition in one of its basis elements. Identity of slavery. Slavery is an involuntary servitude have existed in numerous form throughout centuries. Slavery is at the most elementary level the involuntary coercion or detention of individual to perform some function for the benefits of others. It has taken many names and has been shrouded to circumstances and suspect justification as well. While some may have offered dubious argument that slavery actually has benefited as an enslaved people that otherwise were disadvantaged and unable to competently determine their own future. Others have contended that the institution was necessary to for the good of society. Therefore, various genera of slavery have emerged across the millennia. Slavery encompasses those who were simply seized and sold, those who were captured during the wartime and made to serve the victory, and those whose family events consider it's a privilege to give their children over to the ruling regime for a lifetime of servitude. Beyond those concepts, during the colonial era, and indentured servitude allow individuals to seek their own fortune after paying passage to America with a specified period of work, usually 7 years, for the benefits of another prisoner. Paying their supposed debts to society have often been employed as the laborers, while those who have amassed considerable debt and defaulted have at times been sentenced into bondage as a result. Even today, slavery persists. Although chain may not be visible, millions of people, young and old, are held against their will around the world, human trafficking for purposes of cheap labor and illicit sex trade flourish, despite the best effort of government and law enforcement to eradicate the age-old scourge. And also at the beginning of the podcast today, they get a short story about the slave trade and where those people were taken from. Africa, and they transferred them to different part of the U.S. or in the Caribbean and Central America. As you know, Africa, other slave trades. Slavery was already endemic in African society, and when European explorers first came down to West Coast, slavery may have been punished for a crime or death, or were member of rival tribes who had been captured in war or kidnapping by raiding party. And however, African slaves may have held a different status to those who were unfortunate enough to be chattel slaves on the other side of the Atlantic. They were, may have bad some rights, but the owning property and holding public office when Islam began to spread into Africa in the 7th century. Muslim traders began to range some south and search for new market and partner. Pioneer discovered routes through the Sahara Desert, the past life preserving oasis, often concluding their journey at Sidi Mansa or Cairo Royan in modern Morocco and Tunisia. Thousands of slaves were taken across the desert each year for use as a worker, domestic servant, and concubine in North Africa and wider Islamic world. And also, if you listen to the first, we are talking about Jamestown and captive in 1619, the first colony of enslaved African American. So those people were from the first from Haiti or the Caribbean, and before they transport them to the Virginia, USA.
Five major African tribes that were taken away during the Atlantic slave trade. The Yoruba people were taken from modern-day Nigeria and Republic of Benin to countries such as Brazil, Cuba, and Trinidad and Tobago. The Igbo people, also from Nigeria, were taken to Barbados, Haiti, and Jamaica before being shipped to North America. The Akan people, primarily from present-day Ghana, were taken to Brazil, Jamaica, and Trinidad and Tobago. The Congo people, from the region encompassing modern-day Angola, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Republic of Congo, were taken to Brazil, Cuba, and Haiti. Lastly, the Mandinka people, from countries such as Senegal, Guinea, and Mali, were taken to countries such as Brazil and the United States. These tribes endured unimaginable suffering and displacement as a result of the transatlantic slave trade, with their descendants now scattered across the Americas and beyond.
Slave in North America. Slavery was not the foundation of America, but it was there for not long after the beginnings, and all but tore the country apart, the rift, the culminating in a bloody civil war. It's written by Eduardo Albert from the history. Far from slavery being peculiar to North America, it is an almost universal human institution through the recorded history, accepted by some as a natural order of things, and only in the civilization deriving from Christianity and Buddhism was slavery thrown open. Even if so, the practice went on, albeit in reduced numbers. However, as Europeans ventured upon the age of discovery from the late 15th century onwards, they resumed the practice of slave trading, aided by the incessant internal wars in Africa that produced local chiefs eager and willing to sell prisoners of war. to European traders. The trade network in African slave predated the arrival of European, with much of the having been directed toward defeating the demand from Muslim ruler for African slaves. However, the caravel and the galleon that anchored off the west coast of Africa provided a new and lucrative export market. European merchants, eager to feed the exploding taste for sugar, started shipping increasing numbers of slaves to the Caribbean sugar plantation like Haiti, having offloaded their cargo of slaves, the ship loaded with sugar and returned to Europe, and creating a triangular trade network, Europe and Africa, America, that drove the Atlantic slave trade. And at its peaks, this shipment of people across the sea became a vast enterprise, transporting millions of souls into a life of bondage before the contradiction at its core produced the movement that finally brought it to an end. But while it existed, the Atlantic slave trade was a conveyor belt of suffering and injustice, a moral hypocrisy, and the degrading effects of power. Colonial era. What would become the United States of America was not a draw for European immigrants in early decades of the 17th century. Those seeking their fortune were most likely to head for the Caribbean islands with their sugar plantation, or to South America with its gold and silver. It was so hard to attract settlers to North America that the early colonists started importing people. The first shipload of black African slaves arrived in 1619 in Jamestown to work in the labor-intensive tobacco fields that were starting to produce an economically viable crop for young colony. These African found themselves laboring alongside poor white Europeans who were there before them and who shared the same unfree status. The white labor trade. The British colony of Jamestown, Virginia, was no new world paradise, but a harsh, unforgiving place required backbreaking labor in its field, and with the high rates of mortality among its inhabitants. To provide a workforce and a future for the colony, poor white Europeans, mainly from England and Wales, Scotland, and Ireland, although some came from the Netherlands and other countries in Europe, were recruited. Their passage to the New World were paid at the price of their freedom. They became indentured laborers, which essentially meant they were time-limited slaves tied to their employer and not free to marry or work for themselves until they had worked out the terms of their contracts and pay back the cost of the passage. Over half of the Europeans who came to North America before the revolution came as indentured servants. It was hard and a precarious existence. Its misery made explicit by the letters that young Richard Freethorn wrote home in March 1623, begging that his indenture be paid off or food sent over. For he was healed from lack of food and blood flux, while back home beggars were given more Daniel received as his daily ration. Fruit thorn. Was probably 12 when he would arrive in America. His letter never reached his parents staying in the office of Virginia Company in London, and Fruithorn himself was dead by February 1624, probably not yet 15. In early decades of 17th century, black slaves were not particularly differentiated from white indentured laborers, constituting only about 5% of the population and sharing the possibility of working towards freedom. Anthony Johnson, who was brought to Jamestown in 1621, was nevertheless allowed to work land for himself by his owner. Around 1941, Johnson was granted his freedom, and in 1950 he was allotted 250 acres of land as his own, and his son were granted equivalent amounts of land. Johnson became successful, so successful that he acquired his own slaves. There were some other free blacks, Africans, and around Jamestown, but by 1650 most African people were enslaved. It had been taken Johnson 20 years of work to reclaim his freedom. White indentured laborers generally earn it back after 70 years work. The barriers between races were going up. Further north, in the Dutch-owned colony of New Amsterdam, which would later be renamed New York, the Dutch West India Company imported 11 African enslaved along with 8 settlers, and later brought in black women as wives for these men. The company proved the vital of the frequent dispute with the local Native Americans and its arm, the enslaved Africans, to help in the defense of the colony. Knowing themselves a vital part of the colony's defenses, with African slaves negotiated a settlement with the Dutch West India Company that constituted sort of a half freedom, where they continue to be slave of the company but were free to work in their own regard when they were not required elsewhere. The Puritan colony in Massachusetts live in a conviction town of divinely ordained social strata, with the Pauline injunction to treat enslaved as brothers, which somehow managed to combine charity and condescension in a particularly hypocritical mixtures. However, enslaved African never came to form a large part of the population of Massachusetts. Native American were captured and enslaved in a larger number in Massachusetts and New Amsterdam or New York, with a vigorous trade down the Virginia and South Carolina. The trade in the Native American was facilitated by the traps selling capture for profits, just as was happening across the Atlantic in Africa. However, Native American proved more problematic as slaves, because they were familiar with the land and with their relatives and friends, often close at hand. It was far easier for enslaved Native American to escape their slavery or for their family to rescue them, sometimes with fatal consequences for the slave owner. So grave did this reprisal become that in 1679, New York outlawed the enslavement of local Native American, and in 1706, it forbade the enslavement of any Native Americans. The statute stipulated that Negroes alone should be enslaved. A small brief. The 3/5 of all other persons. An idealist version of the signing the U.S. Constitution painted in 1940 by Howard Chandler. A key question faced by the Constitutional Convention summoned to establish how the new United States of America would be governed was how many delegates each state would have in the House of Representatives and how much tax each state would pay. The interests of the northern and southern states had already diverged, and there was a real possibility that the United States would break up before it properly came into existence. As such, delegates to the convention tried to find a way to tie the southern slave-owning states to the northern state where slave was gradually being abolished. The compromise came in the method of calculating the population of each state, whereby the number of delegates to Congress would be apportioned. The northern states had significantly higher population of the freemen than the southern states. However, if the slave population of the southern state were included in their count, but that would have out the numbers of significantly, but slaves had no voting or other rights in the southern states, were regarded as a law, as a property, not people. Nevertheless, the delegates to the Constitution agree a compromise where a slave was regarded as a 3/5 of freedom for the purpose of the standing delegates to Congress. Up until the outbreak of the American Civil War, the 3/5 compromise effectively handed the southern slave states a greater political power than they would have otherwise had. Codification of slavery. For the first half of the 17th century, there was little legal basis for slavery, as a race-based system perpetually servitude. However, in the second half of the century, a series of laws and court decisions laid the legal basis for the institution of slavery in North America. A foretaste came in 1640 via a ruling by a Virginia court in 3 1-way indentured servants. All three servants were whipped, with the two white servants being ordered to labor an extra year for their master and 3 further years for the colony. However, the third servant, an African man named John Punch, was condemned to serve his master or his assigned for the time of his natural life. The Virginia court explicitly said that it's which this decision because John Punch was African. Virginia, Maryland, New York, Connecticut, and South Carolina all enacted statutes established and regulating slavery in the second half of the 17th century. In a 1662 law, Virginia declared that slavery was hereditary. And matrilineal, you were a slave if your mother was a slave. This made slavery easier to regulate, as it was much more straightforward to determine the mother of a child than the father. It also codified the extensive sexual slavery taking place in the colony, where white master impregnate their African female slave, enable them to claim their own children as their slaves. Virginia also moved to close the religion loophole. Although Christian had long demurred at the idea of enslaving other Christian, the colony resolved in law that slaves remained slaves even if they were baptized Christian. Color was coming to trump faith, continuing to lead the way in codification of the law in 1669. Virginia also enacted a statute of declaring that an owner killing his slave through enthusiastic punishment would not be guilty of murder. After all, the slave was his property, and a slave owner couldn't willfully destroy his own property, so there could be no intention to kill. Where slavery in early colonial America was based upon a class, the growth of legislation in the second half of the 17th century show its mutation into explicitly racial and racist institution. While the majority of labor was still done by white indentured workers, the new American elites were able to divide opposition to their rule by placing African slaves in a lower level than the white indentured laborers, and hierarchy was also created among black African slaves, with favored house slaves at the top, then artisans and field laborer the majority of the bottom. A side effect of this hierarchy of slavery was that many planned rebellions and escapes were betrayed by those higher in hierarchy, anxious of losing their privilege, position, although through loyalty to an owner who had been kind. The dependence on slavery for labor increased following Bacon rebellions by 1676, the situation for indentured white servants was worsening in Virginia, with the law aimed at keeping them from becoming landowners. At the end of the period of servitude, the rich land class in Virginia was intent to keep the land for itself. With resentment growing, the Nathaniel Bacon, a rich man, but the leader of the landless, led a rebellion that saw the governor house stoned and the capital razed to the ground. However, Bacon died of a dysentery, leaving the rebellion leaderless. And reinforcement from England brought it to an end. After the rebellion, two rich and powerful landed elite of Virginia began to invest more in African slaves, no longer trusting white indentured labor. While the opening up of the territory to the West diverted some of the dispossessed by giving them the opportunity to become landowners. In 1680, there were 3,000 African slaves in Virginia. 40 years later, in 1720, this had grown to 27,000. Virginia was changing into a slave-based society, where most labor was done by slaves and all the slaves were black, were African. By the end of 17th century, slavery had been established in all the North American colonies. Dred Scott ruling. In 1836, Dr. John Emerson, a surgeon serving the United States Army, moved from the slave state of Missouri to the free state of Illinois, taking with him his slave Dred Scott. In 1840, Emerson returned to Missouri, taking the now married Dred Scott with him. Emerson died in 1843, and his widow Irene inherited his estate, including his slaves. Dred and Harriet Scott in 1846, Scott attempted to purchase freedom from his family, offering Harriet a merchant $300. She refused. Scott then took the case to the court, arguing that having lived in a free state for 3 years, he and his wife had automatically been freed. The case went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. The issue of slavery was tearing apart the young nation, and the justice of the Supreme Court thought that by settling the matter decisively, they could bring an end to the debate that caused so much friction. On the 6th March 1857, the Supreme Court gave 7-2 majority decision dismissing the case. Chief Justice Roger Taney wrote a long opinion stating the reason for the decision, chief among them being that people of African descent are not included and were not intended to be included under the word of citizens in the Constitution, and can be therefore claimed none of the rights and privileges which that instruments provides for and secure to citizens of the United States. The judgment had exactly the opposite effects, inflaming tension and contributing materially to the descent into civil war. Of all decisions in handing down by the Supreme Court, Dred Scott is universally regarded as the worst. It was abrogated after the Civil War by the 13th and 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. As for Dred Scott, he was muted on 26 May 1857, but died from tuberculosis on 17 September 1858. Slave in colonial era America. From the start, there was a division in the practice of slavery between northern and southern colonies. The climate and soil of the New England did not favor large plantations, so slaves were generally employed in a wide variety of tasks, from household servants to farm workers to artisans, often working alongside with their owner. However, in the South, the tobacco plantation that provides the wealth for the landed class were extremely labor-intensive. Gangs of blacks slave worked to fill houses and barracks or shacks, and generally kept apart from the white population. The slave society was becoming increasingly segregated, and a raft of miscegenation lost it to keep it that way. Although the sheer number of law outlawing sexual relations between the races suggests that such relations occur far more frequently than the segregationists would have liked, in order to cement control over the enslaved, or a series of laws passed in the colony with the largest slave population prohibiting teaching African people how to read and write. In South Carolina was the first to enact such legislation in 1740. Negro Acts making it illegal to teach slave to read or write. However, the first act proved insufficient and new law were passed in 1800 and again in 1834, increasing the severity of punishment. That's new law had to be passed demonstrates that enslaved African people understood perfectly well the worth of learning to read and write, and were willing to risk punishment enshrined in law in order to do so. The ability to read and write enabled slave to forge the written passage necessary to travel away from the owner, and more importantly, to open up the Bible to them. Reading the book that their owner professed to follow revealed the hypocrisy of the slave owner and offered hopes of deliverance and redemption to slave themselves. After all, the biblical narrative of Israel was that of the people delivered from bondage and slavery by God. It takes a slave to fully understand the story of the freeing of an enslaved people from the bondage of Egypt. There were also a few slave revolts, although none of the scale of the slave revolt on some Caribbean island. The largest pre-revolution revolt occurred in 1739 in South Carolina near Stono River. A illiterate slave, Jamie, led 20 men in an attack on the store where they killed the owner and took the gun and ammunition. Now armed, the group set off marching south, heading for the Spanish rule, Florida, where the law stated that slaves who had escaped from the British colony would be freed. The rebels recruited men as they headed south, as well as killing whites before the local militia caught up with them. The rebel lost the battle, but the survivor kept heading south, gradually being rounded up and executed by vengeful and fearful whites. The largest slave revolt, the Turner Rebellion, started on the 21st August 1831. In Virginia, when America was splitting apart into slave and free states. Nat Turner, with between 60 and 80 men killed, 55 whites before the white militia caught up with them. Turner escaped and remained at large for 2 months before being captured. Put on trial, Turner was sentenced to death and hung on 11th of November. After his death, the Turner body was flayed and his skin used for souvenir purses, his flesh boiled down for grease and his bone divided. Slave during the revolution, the Stono and Turner Rebellion took place before and after the Revolutionary War, 1775 and 1783. The war was framed by its American protagonist as a fight for liberty, and as such, many other enslaved people of North America adopted the same language to call for their own emancipation after the colony became independent from Britain. The resulting settlement has codified in the American Constitution end up dividing the country into free and slave states, a division that eventually led to American Civil War in the final bloody and the slave of North America, although by no means was it the end of segregation or discrimination. In fact, the first man to die in American Revolutionary War was an African. Crispus Attucks was living in Boston, Massachusetts when on 5th March in 1770 he joined in with a group of locals involved in fracas and with British troops. The troops opened fire, killing five locals in Boston Massacre. Attucks was hit twice in the chest and was the first to die. Despite the custom of the time for segregated burials, Attucks was buried alongside the other four white victims in a granary burying ground, the men becoming martyrs for the cause of American independence. With American propagandists urging the language of emancipation from slavery to push for independence from Britain, it was not difficult for African people to associate with their own struggle with the national struggle for freedom. However, the leaders of the revolutionary effort were not keen to enlist any African men, understand all too well the implication that would have for southern states and their slave dependent economies. In June 1775, George Washington established the Continental Army, but expressly forbade the enlistment of African American, whether they be free or slave. In response, the Lord Dunmore, the British appointed governor of Virginia, proclaimed freedom to slaves for trans. To join the struggle against the American revolutionaries, despite the Virginia legislature passing a law that ordered death for any African man who enlists with the English, thousands of people made their way to British camp and were enlisted in the Ethiopian regiment whose motto was liberty and to slaves. Fearing runaway recruitment of slaves by the British, Washington was forced to change the tack and allow a black man to enlist in the Continental Army. New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut all allow slave owners to free enslaved people to serve in the Continental Army, with the older northern states following suit. South Carolina, however, never felt the need to extend this possibility to its black population. When the British finally lost the war, some 4,000 African-American left the country, sailing under the Royal Navy protection to their new home. Meanwhile, on the victorious side, 5,000 African men had fought as a part of the Continental Army, and the vast majority of these were formally emancipated afterwards, greatly increasing the number of free African American people in the new nations. It was not just African people who could not square the language of liberty that had inspired the revolution with the reality of slavery. In September 1774, Abigail Adams, the wife of future President John Adams, wrote to him saying, "I wish more sincerely that there was not a slave in our province. It always seemed a most iniquitous scheme to me that fight ourselves for what we are daily robbing and plundering from those who have as good as right to freedom as we have." Indeed, of the first 12 presidents of the United States, only John Adams and his son, John Quincy Adams, never personally owned any slaves. The Adams were by no means alone in their repugnance of slavery and following American independence. Northern states gradually moved to outlaw slavery, just as laws had slowly established slavery, so they were now used in northern states to outlaw it. In line with the new constitution of Massachusetts, its court declared slavery effectively abolished in 1790. Were no slave in the state, emancipation proceeded more slowly in the older northern states, with the last slave freed in New York in 1827, but in the north it was one-way streets toward freedom. However, the question was far from settled in the southern states. The Constitution Convention that met in 1787 to formulate the government for new country was faced with conflicting wishes from the delegates representing the 13 colony to hold the country together. Its new constitution, while never using the word slavery, nevertheless tacitly allowed it, while also decided when Congress would be free to pass a law outlawing the slave trade across the Atlantic. The Constitution also made provision for escaped slaves to be returned to their owners. At the convention, two delegates from Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina threatened to walk out if the importation of slaves was outlawed. Even though the other 10 states had already outlawed the importation of new slaves from Africa, South Carolina delegates Charles Pinckney stated that South Carolina and Georgia cannot do without slaves. The convention therefore decided that Congress would only be able to ban the Atlantic trade for 20 years. South Carolina imported 40,000 slaves before the trade was outlawed. In 1808, the Constitution, Article 4, Section 2, also provided for the return of escaped enslaved to their owners. A brief history, the Royal African Company, the North Atlantic slave trade was done for money. Greed, pure and simple greed, was its driver, and nowhere was the greed exhibited more purely and more brutally than the Royal African Company. The company was incorporated in 1660 by King Charles II, his brother James, Duke of York, and merchants of City of London. It was the first called the Company of Royal Adventurers, trading into Africa. If this sounds romantic, it was the original intention was to search for gold. However, gold proved hard to find. A new charter in 1862 was expanding to include the trade in slaves. At this time, European nations maintained forts in the coast of Africa, but depended upon local African rulers to bring slaves in for trade. The first company was rendered insolvent by laws incurred during the Second Anglo-Dutch War and was supplanted in 1672 by the Royal African Company, with a broader remit and more powers, including the right to found forts and institution martial law in pursuit of profits. Whether that's by gold trade or slavery, or working with local African ruler, the Royal African Company began transporting large number of slaves across the Atlantic, most going to a Caribbean island, but some continuing to North America. The company transported 5,000 enslaved a year, with estimated suggesting that 20% die en route. In 1698, Parliament abolished the monopoly of the Royal African had in the Atlantic slave trade. Faced the competition, the company went bust in 1708, although it's continued trading in a reduced manner until 1752. So overall rhetoric and logic of the Constitution greatly strengthened the case for emancipation of slaves. When the institution disappearing entirely in the northern states, perhaps the same logic might have worked, albeit more gradually in the southern states. If not for the invention of the cotton gin, tobacco was an intensive crop that exhausted the soil, so a new harvest was needed to maintain the economic base in the southern agricultural states. The crops was cut, but it was Eli Whitney's invention of in 1793 of the cotton gin, a machine for quickly and efficiently separating cotton fibers from seeds, that trade made cotton big business, and the southern plantation switched to green cotton, and with the demand burgeoning, the plantation owner grew richer than ever. Cotton, like tobacco, was labor intensive, and the southern plantation owner, as well as their political sponsor, saw slavery as the foundation of the wealth and their position in response to the abolition of movements, Southern white writers began to actively promote slavery as a social and moral good. The contest might have continued locked into a stalemate between the northern and southern states if it were not for the western expansion of the United States. As the America grew, the question of the status of the new states and territories it was incorporating became more and more pressing. Both sides correctly believed that the soul of the new nation was at stake. Quest to Civil War. At the start of the 19th century, America was divided about slavery, but the Union had been preserved by the division being equally half of the 20 states comprising the United States were free states. And half were slave states. But when the Missouri petition to join the Union has a slave states, that delicate balance came under the threat. When Missouri passed the population threshold, it applied for admittance to the United States as a new state. He would be entitled to two senators in the state, thus upsetting the balance of between free and slave as rancor grew between the opposing sides. Henry Clay, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, broken a compromise whereby Missouri entered the Union as a slave state, but at the same time, so did Maine as a free state. Thus, the balance would be maintained, but critically, the Bill of Passage also decreed that slavery should not be allowed north of the lines of latitude of 36 degrees 30 minutes, with the exception of the Missouri, where any future states south of this line would be slave states. Though slavery extended toward the west with the same north and south divided, the issue came to the fore once more in 1849 when California petitioned to join the Union. It acceded as a free state, but in order to mollify the slave states, Congress agreed that while California would be free, people of the New Mexico and Utah Territory would decide whether they would be slave or free states. The compromise also required that people in free states help to capture runaway slaves. This led to considerable heightening of the tension between the free and slave states, and as both took up opposing position on the moral high ground, the people of free states objecting to being co-opted as slave catchers, while those in slave states consider the northern brethren were flouting the new law. As America expanded west, the issues of whether the states petitioning for accession to the Union should be slave or free came up more and more frequently. Just 4 years after California accession, Illinois Senator Stephen Douglas made another attempt at a solution. As the slave states had no interest in allowing new free states into the Union, the westward expansion of the United States has stopped. And the Mississippi River to get it going again, proposed a new bill, the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which decreed that popular sovereignty would decide the issues of whether these new states should be free or slave. Many of Douglas' fellow Democrats considered the ploy to expand slave, and they began to join the other politicians into what would become the Republican Party, united by its opposition to slavery. Thank you. bleeding Kansas when delegates elected in Kansas came to decide whether the state would be free or slave. The votes were skewed by people crossing the border from Missouri to vote for Kansas becoming a slave state. Indeed, so widespread was that fraud that two votes were cast for every registered voter. Though the Kansas legislature passed pro-slavery laws, but so outraged were free states supporting Kansans at this fraud that they began to arm themselves, creating a parallel legislature, while increasingly violent confrontation broke out between free starters and slave supporters who called themselves the Law and Order Party. It was a nasty conflict and revenge for murder free staters burned and terrorized pro-slavery settlers. Before being themselves pursued armed and surrounded in the town of Lawrence in the ensuing siege, abolitionist women smuggle guns hidden in the petticoats to the besieged free starters. The siege was called off in the midst of a cold white winter, but when the slavery supporter returned to Lawrence in the spring, they burned the Free States Hotel and threw the press of the abolitionist paper, the Herald and Freedoms, into river. Back in the East, the Republican supporting paper wrote the events up as the sack of Lawrence. One abolitionist, a man named John Brown, on his way to help his defense of Lawrence, heard that he was too late, but enraged by the events and led the party of men to Pottawatomi Creek, where they were murdered five poor slave settler. After what came to be called the Pottawatomi Massacre, Brown took up guerrilla tactics, fighting skirmishes against pro-slavery militia. Some historians consider this small battle for the first of the Civil War, and with the notoriety Brown had acquired through his action in Kansas, he was able to gather funds for his attack and on Harper's Ferry in West Virginia, where he hoped to gain arms to raise a general slave revolt. The raid failed and Brown was captured and tried and hung for treason. The attack so inflamed the passion on either side that all be made for inevitable. On the morning of the execution, Brown wrote, "I, John Brown, am not quite certain that the crime of this guilty land will never be purged away, but with the blood." Within 18 months of Brown's execution, the American Civil War began. Okay, that's the end of the second party. So to remind you guys, the transatlantic slave trade is one of the most shameful chapter in human history. Between 1500 and 1900, it's estimated that around 12 million African men, women, and children were stolen from their home by Europeans before being forcefully transported thousands of miles across the Atlantic. Those who survived the horrific middle passage would then be sold, often separated from their families, and put to work as enslaved labor on plantations throughout the New World. While this inhumane trade was eventually abolished in the 19th century, the scars still remain, and the lasting impact and still be felt by communities around the world. Thank you. See you next time.